Welcome back to America's leading higher education podcast, The EdUp Experience, where we make education your business. Hosts Dr. Joe Salustio, Elizabeth Leiba, and producer Elvin Freites bring you the brightest and most influential minds in higher education today. We explore innovations, ideas, and issues in higher education and beyond, and hopefully have a little fun along the way. Now let's get to it. If you're experiencing any level of marketing challenge right now, you've got to ask the hard questions and you need answers. Are you using the right mix of channels to get in front of your future students? Is your messaging personalized and delivered in a medium your audience and future students will respond to? And are you spending more time building reporting than listening in on what your students really want? All of these questions will get answered when you sign up for your free consultation with MDT Marketing. Head to mdtmarketing.com/edup, submit your information, and talk to MDT. Don't go it alone. Find the right partner. The guys at MDT, the team at MDT is absolutely amazing. Whether your challenge is the cost of inquiries, your melt, your branding, the bad and incomplete information that come with your inquiries, whatever it is, an audit of your challenges will help your institution, and it's free. mdtmarketing.com/edup.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the EdUp Experience, where we make education your business, interviewing the brightest and most influential leaders in college education, higher education, and beyond. This is your host, Elizabeth Leiba. And with me today, I have the amazing Dr. Stacy Gonzalez. Stacy, how are you? Thank you for joining me.
I am so excited to be here with you today, Liz. Thank you for opening this up and letting me pop in with you.
I know. Thank you for saving me from Joe. It's Women's History Month. We've decided just to blockade him from being a host. So he's no longer allowed to host. We're bringing on influential leaders and we're just going to let the women host the episodes.
Well, you know, he does get that silver fox credit. I told him about that yesterday, that, you know, how we all call him the silver fox. So he gets that all year long. It's about time we get a little bit of
that's right. That's right. And I'm so excited for our guest today because we have someone that their mission speaks really near and dear and close to my heart. And I know that you feel the same way. So without further ado, I want to bring him in on the conversation. His name is Kai Dreckmeyer, and he is the founder and chief development officer for Inside Track. Kai, thank you for joining us today. Are you ready for this girl power? I hope I didn't scare you away with that.
I'm ready. There's no other place I would like to be right now.
Awesome. I want to kick it off because I have so many questions. I've been looking over your website and I am so fascinated by everything that you do and your role in higher education and what you do as far as your programming and your initiatives. So I'm a huge fan. Anybody that listens to EdUp knows that I'm a huge comic book fan. Stacy knows this as well about me, that I'm super into comic books and Marvel Universe in DC. I know this is going to sound like absolute like heresy, but I actually hold them both very near and dear and I don't have a favorite. But my big thing is origin stories. So I'd love for you to tell us about your origin story, how you got into this space, and a little bit about Inside Track. For those that are listening and maybe don't know about your organization, what is Inside Track and what do you guys do?
Well, let me start with that and then I'll go to the origin story. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Makes perfect sense.
So we work primarily in higher education, but a little bit beyond it too, to help students and people really reach their potential and contribute in the best ways that they possibly can. And the big measures of our work are moving the needle on first year retention, but also on graduation or completion rates. And a lot of people are hard at work at that. We are in a position where we can say we've really done it. We've now provided coaching, which is our main method for moving the needle and making a difference in people's lives. We've now provided coaching to more than 2.5 million students over the last 20 years. And we have been evaluated pretty extensively by third-party researchers. We've done now more than 100 RCTs, that's randomized controlled trials, almost like a clinical drug trial, that has provided data and evidence that yes, we truly do improve retention and graduation rates. And in fact, the late Donald Kennedy, he was once the head of the FDA and the president of Stanford University, he once said, if there were a drug trial with results like this, we'd have to end the experiment and give it to everybody. So that was pretty cool. And we now do a few other things. We're also helping a lot of institutions on the front end as they onboard students to make sure that they get more of the students starting, but also starting really ready to be successful. We're doing increasing amount of career coaching on the back end. And then finally, you know, we're not just a direct kind of outsourced service provider. We also do a lot of professional development and training, capacity building, technical assistance to help colleges and universities do this work on their own, eventually without us. I'll stop there to catch my breath. Any questions on any of that?
That is phenomenal. Like you said, those are some amazing results. I think the industry as a whole has had a lot of time, especially with everything that's happened around the country over the past year, to really sit and be introspective with the role that we play and also what we need to do better in terms of retention and student success. And looking at your metrics and some of your outcomes, I feel like this is like super phenomenal. So I guess I want to drill down and speak about some of those initiatives and some of those programs that you offer. And I guess talk about, like, in terms of the logistics, how that actually would work. So if someone is a college leader, do they just approach your organization to say, hey, we're having some issues with the retention, and then you offer solutions, and then you're able to come in as like an outside consultant to kind of give them some guidance? Do you kind of provide, like, what exactly would that look like in terms of like the impact on a campus, for example?
Yeah, yes, really good question. And the answer you started to provide is accurate. You know, people will come to us, say they need help, and we will find a way to help them. One thing that has changed over the years, you know, we have always from the beginning been about helping people, students in particular, to reach their potential, to be successful, to get clear on their goals, to get a clearer sense of who they are, how they are, and opportunities to really, you know, ride with their strengths, but also shore up areas where they need to get better. And in doing that with students, we realize that really this kind of culture and vibe of care and concern and a strength-based approach is really important. And I think something we didn't always do coming in early on is to realize institutions need that too. And I think, you know, you especially as you're new to sort of selling anything to a complex, broad organization, you assume, oh, we're talking to the president or the provost. They can just decide, this is amazing, they should hire us. And the reality is that it doesn't always work that way. They need to bring a lot of people to look at this. And that is a complex discussion, because sometimes coming in and saying, we're amazing, we've done this, we're really good, is obnoxious and offensive to the people who are already hard at work trying to make it happen in an environment that is just complex and has all, you know, you don't have enough time, everything's moving quickly. And so we have realized we have to take that thoughtfulness and kind of sense of care and really bring that to the institutions themselves. And so a good deal of modesty and self kind of reflection on our part has been important. And so we want to show up ready to help and not judging, criticizing, suggesting it's easy, because it's not. And I wanna tell you, we've had a lot of success, but we have failed too, right? And we have learned from that, and that's partly what has gotten us to where we are. So to be more direct in the answer though, we will talk with an institution, and I think for me, it really is finding out what is it? What is the outcome you really want? What seems to be getting in the way of this? And what's the best approach forward? And the challenge I think always is, and the reason we do the kind of capacity building and training work is because that's really what colleges usually want. Often it is better if they start with us supplementing the work they're doing with coaching, and there's a number of reasons for that. But we're willing to start kind of any way that works. So we're just trying to, just as we meet students where they're at, we're trying to do that with colleges and universities as well.
Before I pass it back to Stacy, because I know she has a ton of questions, student success and outcomes and how to support students is really very much in her wheelhouse. How did you decide that this was something that you wanted to offer? Because 20 years ago, I have to say, I've been in education since I guess the early 2000s. And I almost feel as though during that time, the big push was enrollment, not so much on student success and not so much on retention. Not to say that schools didn't think about it, but I think that that was like the time frame that where a lot of people were just so focused on the idea of let's just get students in and then, you know, let's help to change lives, that kind of rhetoric that was going on in the industry. What made you focus and drill down on the idea that we want to provide support services back when you did start the organization?
So it's a great point. When we sort of showed up on the scene, and I maybe will drop into the origin story a little bit here for a minute, but when we showed up in really 2000, 2001, there was a big focus on college access, and that really was needed. You know, we were mm-hmm. not seeing, and we're still not seeing, enough representation of, you know, all of the of Black, Indigenous, people of color on our campuses. And so there was more and more outreach. And I think we have been part of the shift to having it be not just about access, but success. And so we're not the first. A lot of people have been talking about counseling, advising, holistic advising, talking about it different ways, even before we were here. But what I think really happened, and I'll kind of tie this to the origin story. And again, there are many origin stories. If you talk to my co-founder and mentor, really, Alan Tripp, he would tell you a slightly different story. But what brought me here, you know, I'm from a family that's really committed to doing good, making the world a better place, first and foremost. And I kind of lucked out in about eighth grade, there was this peer counseling program getting started and really looking at how students could help other students be happier, you know, have greater well-being and just do better in school, be more successful and have everyone a little bit more integrated in a positive way. That got me more and more interested in psychology. And I ended up studying psychology. You know, my dream was to be a university professor. That didn't happen for me. But I, from a very early age, was thinking, hey, there's got to be ways through dialogue and support to help more people feel better about themselves, but also really reach their potential and be as successful as they can be or want to be. And so Alan and I started talking about this concept. And as we got into it with colleges, you know, originally we were thinking this would be about helping soon-to-be graduates prepare for life after college. And there was not a ton of career support back at that time. And as we got into it, we realized, wow, you know, we were doing this as kind of a direct consumer business just off campus at Stanford University and UC Berkeley, started here in the Bay Area. And we found, well, even at these highly selective colleges, students need more support than they're getting. They need somebody to talk through this stuff. They need to kind of just be a little bit more thoughtful about how they're spending their time and how they're going to get organized. And then also many students just need more help meeting their basic needs. So as we kind of move forward, that was our argument that the whole way that higher education is set up, generally designed by folks who are self-starters, they're PhDs, that it expects a lot that is not totally reasonable in today's world with today's students. And if you can provide more support, more one-on-one, kind of confidential, quiet, in the background support for students, they're gonna do way better. And our first three or four clients said, you know, that sounds nice, but we're doing a lot already. Can you prove it to us? And we did. And so that's why we started off with doing all of these RCTs or randomized controlled trials, where we'd have a comparison group and see what happened with the coaching or without it. And that really led to a lot of our success.
Wow. That is, as I'm listening to what you're saying, that is so fascinating that you've been able to go from this macro, right? You were talking about, you really focus on retention rates and the success that you've done. But I mean, when you talked about like through dialogue and support in a very humble way, you use the word, this word, just you wanted to kind of show up pretty humbly to these universities with the work that they're already doing. That is so transformative and so important. I'm wondering if you could share a little bit about what does it look like? So a student needs some support. What does it look like on behalf of the student? And then how is the coach showing up and what does that look like?
Yeah, really good question. When I think about some of the things that are kind of our secret sauce, one of them is that from the beginning, we've been good at finding and connecting with students and driving engagement. And that's really important because a lot of times when a college or university wants to provide additional support, they want to do it affordably. So they say, hey, who do we think is high risk or who's already behind in some course? And then, reach out to them, swarm them, text them, email them, whatever. And at that point, you're accidentally sending a message to the student that we're worried about you. And that's maybe okay, but sometimes it can be very off-putting and it suggests, well, the institution doesn't think I'm gonna make it, And so our approach is to be proactive. We want to identify, hey, here are the students we're gonna work with. And we would love it if it is a blend and a mix of students. And we reach out and we make this about success and excellence. You're not being targeted. We're not worried. We want to make sure you have an outstanding experience here and that you do your very best. And you look back in your college years as something just, not only did you have fun and a great experience, but you did really well and you learned a lot and you prepared yourself for your future. So that's a big piece of it. And the coach's job is first and foremost to establish relationship and a sense of trust. And just think about it for all of us. Not everybody wants to have a coach or executive coach, but if you can have someone in your life where you can talk with them confidentially, you don't have to impress them. It's not going to go anywhere or affect your brand. You can kind of fall apart for a moment. You can be confused. That actually is a total relief, and it allows you just to kind of get working on stuff and moving forward. So first and foremost, having a relationship, a trust-based relationship where the student uses this helpful resource. And then we're really working to help the student self-assess on where they're at, how they're doing. We're helping them get clarity on their goals. Why are they in school in the first place? And by the way, we ask that in a very supportive way, but it's important for students to have a reason and not just to have it be because it seems to be the right thing or it's for someone else. And then the reality is that we have done this enough with enough students that we can see the road ahead and all the bumps. And why not tell students about that and also normalize their experience and let them know, look, you're not the only one. There are other folks who are actually struggling with the same thing we're talking about right now. It's very normal. And just so you know, it's going to be important to think about these things. They can then tackle various issues proactively rather than feeling like suddenly they're under the gun and they've made a mistake.
That is really awesome. And I think it's what it really does is it provides a way for students to tap into those feelings that they're having, especially right now. I'd imagine during the pandemic, it's even further. You've been doing this for quite some time, but I'd imagine that this past year has been really hard for students. And so to have that support from a peer, it could be really helpful during this. What have you noticed as we've been in the pandemic and we've switched to this virtual space? Like how is your company, how have you shifted or what changes have you noticed or made?
Well, long before, one thing we've realized, particularly if you're dealing with low income populations, first generation students, I don't want to suggest, just provide more coaching and everything will be fine. Part of what coaching does is recognizes helping the student to understand, but also to have the institution understand where the student is, and the challenges. And a lot of times we've found, hey, there are basic need issues. And by the way, so often the kind of lower success rates of certain populations, it is all about resources and income. And so that's one of the things that's challenging for me. I'm a big proponent now that, hey, we do need more of these micro grants. And I would love to do a study where we're coupling kind of emergency aid with coaching, because we do kind of know where it's needed. We see it daily, and it's painful when you can't provide and you see that a student really needs it. So during the pandemic, that has just been amped up incredibly. And in fact, for one project we're doing here in it's California, we're calling it the California Re-enrollment Project, where we're reaching out to, you know, thousands of students who were in college before but have since dropped out. We've done this partly as a survey, as we're identifying students to participate, and we are learning that COVID has had a huge disruption. And it's not just housing insecurity, food insecurity, health issues, taking care of family members, but also for the students themselves, like more than 50%, Frank, no kidding, it's like 58% are self-reporting on a survey that they're struggling with some issues around mental health. And so you realize so many things in our society kind of come down to resources, you know? And so I think for us, when we think about the work we do, it's really twofold. Number one, it is about the direct impact on students. Having this coaching approach really help them get clear on their goals, what they're gonna do about it, getting them to take action. The second piece is that once you're talking with 1,000 or 10,000 or more students in a state or at an institution, it has kind of a public health element where the coaches are listening and capturing data, all kind of anonymized, and then creating data sets that can actually say something to institutional leadership. Sometimes it is, hey, there are some process challenges at your college that are tripping up students. And by the way, it's tripping up low-income students in particular, or kind of at the state level. I mean, it's been just really upsetting to me just to see the economic impact and how so many students are really struggling with these basic needs issues. So that is a big piece of coaching, is that I think it can inform public policy, because we can start to see what are the challenges. Coaching is a solution to address some of this, but it's also a way of understanding what are those issues that students face.
Are you using the right mix of channels to get in front of your audience? Is your messaging personalized and delivered in a medium your audience responds to? Are you spending more time building reports than listening in on what your audience wants? These are not easy questions to answer. That's why our great friends at MDT Marketing are offering a free audit of your marketing efforts. Head to www.mdtmarketing.com/edup and submit your information for your free consultation today. Look, guys, you got nothing to lose. It's free. I don't know why you wouldn't want a free audit to tell you what you're doing, whether it's effective, and how you can make some incremental changes that can make a big difference moving forward. That's www.mdtmarketing.com/edup.
And you talked about online. What are some of the strategies? Because I think when the initial pivot to online happened, and myself as being an online instructor, I think the prevailing wisdom at that time was, okay, this is just going to be kind of a blip, and then we'll go right back to the classroom. And obviously, as we go into the second year of the pandemic, we're seeing that at least for the near future, there's going to be either online learning or a hybrid mix or something that's going to be a little bit different. How can we best support students as we continue now going into another year of this sheltering in place? And to some extent, students are still a little hesitant about being on campus full time. And what are some of the best practices and things that you're hearing and things that maybe your organization is helping to support as far as initiatives on these campuses across the country?
Yeah, really good question. First and foremost, I would say you know, this has been a hard year for, it's not just students, but for college and university personnel, for faculty, you know, getting used to this new environment. If you haven't done it before, it's hard to teach online, to teach on Zoom, really, is what most people are using. And students are stressed, probably there's more critical, bad reviews, all this stuff. So we just think about something like the pandemic, it has all these kind of other effects that kind of compound. So it's been a really tough year. The good thing, I do think, is that it is kind of have us in a spot where remote learning, remote communication and support are here to stay. And that's really is a good thing. I think we're going to see more colleges and universities, you know, allowing people and maybe even high schools to have a day where faculty can teach from home, and they may actually like doing that. They may miss it, right, when we go back fully. But here's the big one. I think that we had this sense just, you know, 5 years ago and even 2 years ago or 1 year ago that a meeting ideally happens in person. And many people know, no, let's just talk by phone, that's fine. But I think in student services, student affairs, there still was a culture of like, hey, I'm in my office, there's a line out the door of students and they're gonna come in. And sometimes students schedule a meeting and they miss it. And that's just not, doesn't have to be that way. I think that there is a real efficiency to meeting via Zoom, to having a text-based conversation with a student or meeting by phone, you know? And I think that is going to extend the bandwidth of student support, student affairs professionals. And I think we're gonna find we're gonna meet students where they are. And that if there's a day that they don't have to come into the campus, but they can talk with somebody about whatever it is some other way, that's really a good thing. And so commute time is something that has certainly suffered. People are commuting less, and that's really a good thing. And so we've got to think about the kind of overall aggregate time saving as we do things differently. So that would be my main message on that.
Is there any pushback from, you think, people that still feel like, no, the students have to be in person? Like, I totally am with you because I'm a huge believer in online learning. And we see that even from our interactions on social media. And sometimes people are kind of like, why is she making a comparison with social media? But if we think about how social media has changed our lives since Facebook in 2008, I think is when I first started my Facebook. And we have literally, like, I didn't even go to my high school reunion. Like, I went to my first one, and then it was like people were just catching up with each other on Facebook. A lot of times you catch up with family on social media and friends and people that you know, you almost feel as though you're joining with them as they're getting married, as they're having their children and things like that. But it's like, no, I just saw a post. It wasn't that I actually talked to the person. So we know that there's an ability to build community on social media, but I feel as though us as institutions sometimes have not been as accepting or embracing of the idea that a student can do an academic counseling appointment online, or a student, like you said, you don't have to go to campus and have a line around the block for you to talk to somebody. You actually can do that. Is your sense of the idea that we are definitely going to see that integrated? Do you feel as though campuses are going to be more receptive to that? Or do you feel as though, even though this is something that's happening right now, there is still kind of a little bit of a resistance and perhaps the longing for us to go back to how things were before all of this happened?
Yeah, well, it's good to remember that I think most students, particularly the traditional age student of kind of 18 to 23, they would love to be back on campus and together for the social components of it. But I think there is something nice also in a discussion to be in person. Now, at the same time, many of the students coming in now and what we have to look forward to in the next 3, 5, 7 years, these are digital natives. And so there's no going back. Colleges have got to change and accept this. And I think the challenge universities have is, and this is good and bad, there's positives, but the connection of just tradition and the importance of tradition and the thoughtfulness and the slowness with which we move forward and to make change. And so the pandemic accelerated all of that. And I want to be very careful not to say, you know, the pandemic had some positive effects. It did, obviously, but more negative than positive for sure when you think about the suffering of people. But for colleges, it has given a boost. It forced a change. And so I think we're going to see far more distance learning, online learning, synchronous and asynchronous. We are going to see more distance meeting. I don't know if you've had this experience, but you know, I'm pretty extroverted, and sometimes just being on Zoom in a social way is so helpful. And it does do the trick. It's not quite the same for me as being in person, but it's really nice. And so I think folks are going to realize that, you know what, this can happen. And it's got so many benefits. You know, think about just the carbon emissions went down a lot this last year because there's a lot less driving, a lot less of that happening. And so there are positives that really do align with the university mission. Now, having said all that, many students have and do experience social isolation. So we got to make sure we don't overdo it and kind of move too fast. You know, online is great, but it is not for everybody. And even adults who are in fully online programs, should they go and get together for an in-person graduation, it is very memorable. And, you know, it's moving. And so we should remember, we can live in both worlds. And I think the hybrid approach is the way to go.
That is so true. And we're going to, you know, people, as they realize when we quote unquote go back to whatever going back even looks like, it's this whole notion of normal in any way, shape, or form, not going to be there, right? But just as students are getting used to these ways of interacting, they're going to expect that. They're going to want to continue some of these things. So it's real smart of you to be thinking about how your coaches are going to be still supporting students. I was thinking about the move from, because I'm a high school, right? My experience is in secondary education. I was thinking about how hard it is. And I have two of my own young adults who are in college, and how that transition from high school to college is so different now. And what our young Gen Zers need relative to support in the social emotional support is huge, and it's different. And they're okay with talking about how they feel. And they're not as concerned about HIPAA and privacy policies and some of these things that maybe, and I'm not saying we shouldn't be concerned about those, and certainly your organization and sort of have all those things in place. But this is the way our kids are expecting to be engaging with others, to be able to talk about their struggles, their challenges, and have others. So I think that's what you're doing is really important. I'm wondering, I want to kind of take you back a little bit because you made a mention of this. You said that you wanted to be a professor. And so I'm a little interested in how you went from professor to founder to chief development officer. Kind of what's your story in that? Was there a moment or something that really shifted for you or pivoted for you?
That is a great question, Stacey. Thank you. And I'm going to answer that. I just want to go back to what you're talking about. Today's students, or today's young people, I have two high school students myself, they're different. And overall, I think it's positive. I think they are under a lot of stress, and it's new stress, right? It's different. And they've got themselves out there very publicly. But overall, I do feel that the world, the country is moving forward in a positive way culturally. And I think some of the new norms are mostly pretty good. But to answer your question, it's a great one. I should, this will be revealing. So my parents were both university professors. And, you know, I would say liberal is an understatement, very left. And just believe, wow, you know, our kid's great. I was youngest of three. He's going to be fine. He's probably doing great in school. There was not a ton of oversight, or the parenting we do today is very different, I think. You know, we're more hands-on. We know what's going on. And so I was an okay student, but not a great student. And as I was in college, I was like, "But this is, I was able to do well, but just having the focus to follow up, do things on time and get it all done." I was like, there's no way I'm going to do a dissertation and a PhD someday. And I just realized I was not happy in a kind of an unstructured environment, which is what college was at the time, really. You know, it's got different and more structure now, I think. And so that was really it. And so I was graduating from UC Santa Cruz in 1991 and not totally sure what I wanted to do. At that time, for me at least, and I think many people, you kind of figure out your career for a couple of years after college. We're not doing that anymore. Students are taking on way more debt in general, but also there's this kind of, I don't want to call it careerism, but a career and life focus where you want to, you know, you want to launch pretty quickly after you graduate. That really wasn't what was happening then. And I thought, well, I've got to do something. I was thinking, I'll become a teacher. And that was sort of my goal. And I knew I wanted to make a difference in people's lives. That was sort of it. And I just got really lucky. I met this guy, Alan Tripp, who ended up becoming really an important friend and mentor, who was about to start a business, an after-school learning center for kids. And he invited me to join him. And he often describes me as a co-founder of that. I really wasn't. I mean, he had the full business model put together. But that launched me into a life of being kind of on the edge of education, or really in it, but not you know, there at a school as a professor or at a high school. And also organization building and entrepreneurship, which is actually something that I didn't really know about. It wasn't an emphasis in my family, you know, really at all. My like grandfather was kind of a druggist and a businessman, but you know, that was it. And so just really found that I love the idea of like, wow, we've got this organization, we've got to make something of it, we've got to hire people, we've got to have a sense of why this matters. And that's kind of probably always been my thing that I guess maybe I have brought to this uniquely, is it really is about making a difference and doing good. And so here at Inside Track, I basically have done every position. Early on, all of us were coaches, Alan and I were, and everyone who worked with us. And slowly we, you know, got more people, and I really ran our operations sort of along with others, invented our methodology and defined that, and then got in more to the market-facing pieces of it. And now, you know, 20 years in as a founder, I still love what we're doing. You know, and there's things, part of me thinks, to answer your question, that, gosh, should I go back and get a PhD now? Now I actually think I could do it. I have something to say, but you know, I'm 52, and I don't know if I have that in me right now to do that. I've got other responsibilities with family.
I'm starting to believe more and more the older I get in honorary doctorates. So, you know, Liz might have some more clout in that area since she's higher ed, but for sure, you've done some incredible, really incredible things in 20 years, and to be a part of something that was founded 20 years ago and is still sustaining in a model that really, to your point, the heart of it is this whole idea about making a difference for people. And that gives you 20 years right there of experience, which I say, just call yourself Dr. Connie.
Thank you. Well, and I'll just a few other things on that line. You know, we have a great organization and it's been changing the whole way through. We're at a really great stable spot now where, you know, we started as a venture-backed for-profit. And if we hadn't done that, this never would have happened. We needed risk capital. To do this. We couldn't have just raised philanthropic funds. But fortunately, we were bought by Strata Education Network in 2017, which has been great. They've been very supportive. And that gave a good return to our investors. And then now they realized in the last couple of years, it makes way more sense for us to be nonprofit. So that's been really exciting too. We've made this transition to nonprofit. We need leadership that's going to take us forward for the next 5 or 10 years, who really wants to be managing an organization of people. And so a wonderful person here at Inside Track, Ruth White, has just risen up through our organization over the last 7 or 8 years. And she's now, we've given her the title of president. And I'm now doing what I also love, which is I'm out trying to help us grow, but also talking with philanthropy. And that's my current role as chief development officer, which I'm really enjoying.
That's awesome. And I love how you are able to see the trajectory of your life and then thinking about what you've done and built in your life and then thinking about your students that you work with. So I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit from a university standpoint, when they engage with you, what does it look like if I were a university and I said I wanted to work with you and have your coaches work with our students? How do you kind of build that out?
That is hard because it depends, but I'll answer the best I can. In many cases, there will be an opportunity. There's the feeling of a gap and, hey, we need more bandwidth, and we will provide coaching as students are in the pipeline and coming into the college to help improve yield and make sure they get a strong start. And then we also sort of will sit in between a little bit and support the transition from admissions to student services, student affairs, and end up being a voice, an ear on the phone for these students, and focus really on first and second year retention. That's often how it looks. In other cases, there will be a sense of, hey, we've got a great organization. We want to tune it up. We want to make sure we're doing all of the high impact practices. And we will come in and do a kind of diagnostic needs assessment to see where there are opportunities. And that's very important to do that in a way that is supportive. And frankly, we're finding colleges need to hear what students need to hear, which is, you're not the only one experiencing this. It's hard. And it's not you. It's really the situation here. And so let's, you know, be open, be honest, and work together. And we will then, from that, do some work to help them understand the student journey and really what they're solving for. And then follow that with other design work to think, how could things be done a little bit differently here? And follow that up with a lot of professional development and training. And by the way, just for all colleges, I just find faculty, sometimes, but not always, get a lot of professional development that they don't always get much, and they love it. There is, you know, being in a situation as a learner is something that can be so motivating for folks. And so same with student affairs. And we just see kind of the light go on for sometimes for folks who have been at it for 10 or 15 years and just kind of not as excited as they once were, but suddenly they embrace new ideas, they're getting training, and it just lights them up. And I think that has been really exciting for me to see.
I love everything that you had to say. This has been so, were you going to say something, Stacey? I feel like I heard you come off the mic for a second.
No, you go ahead, Liz.
Oh, okay. So I want to be respectful of your time. You've been with us for almost an hour, and this has been like, I have a notepad full because you dropped so many gems. I love this concept of student success and not a cookie cutter solution. And you emphasized that, which I think is really salient to what we're doing, which is, students have so many different needs. Students are coming from so many different backgrounds and so many different areas of concern. So being able to work with the university and create systems in place that support students, but give students a whole system that they can use to meet their goals, I think is really admirable. And like Stacey said, the fact that you've been doing it and sustaining this for not a year, not 2 years, for decades, is like such a testament to who you are as a person. Because that longevity and just that servant leadership, I think, is such an important marker of success in this sector. So I just wanted to just appreciate you for what you've done for higher education. And I'm so glad that you've had the opportunity to kind of spread the word about everything that you're offering. So I want to end on a couple last questions that we want to make sure. If there's anything that we haven't touched on about Inside Track, about your initiatives, about services, how people can get in contact with you, anything that you think that, you know, might be helpful for our listeners. And in addition to that, if you can answer this question, which would be, what does the future of higher education look like?
Wow. there's a lot. First, I want to say thank you for what you just said. And it's an honor to be on your show. And and if people want to reach me, I'm pretty old school. So email, it's just kai@insidetrack.com.org. And but I'm also on LinkedIn and other things, but I don't use some of those other platforms in the way I should. So, what's next for higher ed? I have to say that I don't know for sure, honestly. I'll tell you some things I would like to see. We do some really good work that is really employer paid for Kaiser and some of its affiliated unions, Kaiser Permanente, the hospital. One thing they've recognized, that particularly for adult learners going back to be successful, they need a little bit of release time from work and a stipend to cover that gap. And so it costs money for sure, but rather than free community college or something like that, I would say, let's recognize the resources and income of low-income Americans. And if we're going to have them go to school, which I do think is positive, and they should do if they can, we got to find a way to make that realistic. Because many of our even traditional age, but kind of post-traditional students, are in a spot where they're 20 and they're working almost full-time and driving for Uber and trying to attend the university. And it's just flat out not fair, but you can understand why you would see a gap and they would need to drop out and get their education over 6, 8, 10 years. So I'd like to see more of that. I do see a possibility where technology can just get stronger and stronger and stronger. And we do need that because the general affordability piece, it does matter. And I think technology can solve some of that. It's solved some of it for us. You know, there are certain things we do in coaching that we've managed to digitize, and it's cost savings and students actually like it better sometimes. So I think there's possibilities there, but I don't want to suggest that I can see how it's all going to be. I think in the near term, you're right, though, we're going to see more virtual, more hybrid for sure. Those are some parting thoughts.
Absolutely. And thank you for those insights. I trust that you added so much value today that anything that you say, I'm like scribbling in my notepad, because I think you have a world of wisdom and knowledge and insight into the industry. So I appreciate you gracing us with your presence, and it's been an honor to speak with you. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, Kai Dreckmeyer, founder and chief development officer for Inside Track. Thank you for joining us today, Kai.
Thank you, Elizabeth, and thank you, Stacy.
Hey, everybody. We hope you enjoyed that episode of The EdUp Experience. To learn more about The EdUp Experience, please visit our website at www.edupexperience.com and subscribe to our email list. Please share this podcast, head over to Apple, and please give us a rating and review. We appreciate your feedback. And of course, subscribe to The EdUp Experience so you're notified when our episodes drop. Here at The EdUp Experience, our goal is to make education your business. Thanks for listening.